welcome to the Writers Co-op, a business podcast for freelance writers everywhere.
We're your co-hosts. I am Wudan Yan.
And I'm Jenny Gritters.
This week on the podcast, we're going to answer the question we probably get asked the most frequently by aspiring and full-time freelance writers. How and where do you find assignments?
Honestly, this is the question I get asked by literally everyone who reaches out to me about my job. People want to know where we find work because obviously that's a big key part in building a sustainable freelance business. And I don't think there's necessarily a set answer to the question of where you find work. There's a lot of places you can find work, but Wudan and I have some tips and tricks for finding gigs that'll work for your schedule and also your interests.
Let's start by talking about what a typical month of work looks like for each of us and where we found that work, with the understanding that there's so much variability month to month.
Yeah, totally.
Jenny, what are you working on?
Well, I am currently on maternity leave, which is something I'll talk about later on, how to take maternity leave as a freelancer. But that means right now I'm working on taking care of a baby.
So yeah, in early January, Jenny had a baby.
Surprise. He's the best. But here, I'll answer that question, Wudan, by telling you about the month before I went on leave. My baby came surprisingly early. So that last month of December was really busy. Let me talk you through what my schedule looked like. I had one copy editing client. I usually log about 10 to 15 hours per week for them. I'm on contract with them. And then I also was writing three blogs for a local university medical center. Those are 500 a pop, and they're pretty basic. They're about healthcare topics. And then I also had a few stories to finish up for a steady client. I'm on a contributing writer gig for that client. And then I also was finishing up a long-form product review and a science-focused piece about the maternal brain. And those two are for more mainstream publications. So that's the list. It was a pretty busy month for me. I was also super pregnant. So,
Wudan,
I was tired. Wudan, what about you? What's on your roster this month, since I know you are also very busy?
Yeah, this month has been bonkers. I have 3 weeks of travel coming up. That's planned for two separate stories. So I'm really trying to get all my ducks in a row for that. I've been balancing three feature fact checks for three different magazines, and I have two stories and an edit on a feature due next week. Both my stories due are on the shorter side, and one's a Q&A that makes the writing a little less painful. But yeah, it's a lot. And having just said that makes me feel tired.
Yeah, that sounds super exhausting. We've both been, I would say, extra busy lately. Not now that I have a baby, but before. Our months have been pretty crazy. So what I want to do, though, is talk about where we found each of these gigs, since this is what people are often asking us about. So Wudan, can you go through those and tell us where you found each of those assignments or pieces of work?
Yeah, so I'll break it up and address the fact-checking part first. I'm a regular fact-checker for two of the three pieces I had, and the third that I got through a referral. The two regular ones, one I was referred to, and the second one I wrote a first piece for the magazine first, and then when I realized they use fact-checkers, I dropped their research editor a note being like, hey, by the way, but, right, I think that's maybe a little forward, but it got the job done. Yeah, and it is a magazine I really love, and I'm glad to still be contributing, even if I'm not always writing for them. And then the two written pieces, the Q&A I'm working for is for a publication I've had a relationship with for a while. I actually started off fact-checking for them, and because I was trained as a fact-checker, I always call fact-checking my Trojan horse into getting other people to realize that I'm trustworthy and give me assignments for stories that I'm pitching. And my second story is a news feature for the New York Times Science Desk, which I'm a contributor to. I started writing for the Science Desk because I was recommended to the editor, and I try to be humble about this, aka not talk about it, but that's the long and short of what happened. What about you, Jenny? Where did you find the assignments for your last month of work?
So I am in a similar boat where a lot of my work comes through referrals. I always say this is sort of the first bucket of how the smart way to find assignments is through people you know. So I found my major copy editing client through an old coworker of mine who I worked with probably 4 years ago. And I met up with her a while back just for fun to catch up because she was in town. And she mentioned that she was doing some copy editing work for this client. So I asked her to keep me posted if that client ever needed extra help. And I didn't hear anything from her. So I followed up via email a few months later when I had some extra time. And at that point, she connected me to the hiring manager and he needed help. So he hired me. So always worth it to send that email, like Wadan was saying, like, hey, by the way, I do this thing too. So the blogs that I write for that local university also came through a mutual connection. I actually was interviewing for a full-time job at the publication, and that was back when I was laid off, and I decided I didn't want the full-time job, but the woman really liked my writing, so she started to assign me freelance work, which was a really great thing, and I've been doing that for about a year and a half off and on. And then the client on retainer that I was talking about, where I'm a contributing writer, the editor there reached out because she heard through a former colleague that I had been laid off. That's a rare case where the editor would just said, hey, do you want to do work? Even though they'd never met me. And that has definitely evolved. I started by just doing a few pieces for them, and now it's regular work. Then the product review is for a place I used to work. And yes, the very place where I was laid off. It's a testament to not burning bridges, as Wudan said when I mentioned this before. So I'm back doing work for that place. A reminder that layoffs are not usually about you. And then the maternal brain story I was talking about is also for the New York Times parenting desk. And I got that because I posted on social media saying I wanted to write more about parenting. And a former colleague was like, I think you'd be a great fit for working with this editor. She introduced me to that editor. I sent over 3 different pitches and she accepted this one. So you can see it is about personal connections and quote unquote networking. And then a little bit of cold pitching, but not a lot. So I want to talk a little bit about networking, and we're going to address this later actually in a full episode. But Wudan, what do you think about networking? Because I think you're really good at it, but I also know you kind of hate it just like me.
I think I hate the conventional description of networking and how gross it can be, but yeah, I mean,
it can feel super gross. Yeah,
super transactional. So I mean, when I think about networking, I think about what is the point of it, right? Because networking doesn't necessarily mean deliberately seeking out editors or people who can hire you and give you jobs. Like, that's the part to me that feels gross and transactional. Mm-hmm. The way that I've conceptualized it to not be so sleazy is networking as relationship building. And that's not just with other editors or anyone who commissions you. It's with other reporters, staff reporters, even other freelancers. And I say this because other freelancers can help send along editor contacts. Other reporters, staff reporters can also help make connections that you might not know about. But I mean, if there's anything to take away about networking, for right now at least, it is really relationship building. I want editors to know how I think, what type of work I enjoy, whether a story that they're thinking about is up my alley. So if they're in a position to assign, they might think of me. Yeah. What about you, Jenny?
Yeah. So I think there's nothing more anxiety provoking to me than the idea of walking into a room full of people where I don't know anyone and having to make awkward conversation just for the sake of trying to quote unquote build my career. Like, that's literally my purgatory. I'm very much introverted. I hate that. But I do think I network in a similar way by just connecting with people whose work I genuinely like. And also because of the nature of media and everyone getting laid off at one time or another, I have a lot of former colleagues who work in lots of different places. So my connections often come from people I've worked with in the past or who I've met in sort of a social context. I rarely will just send like a cold email or try to connect with someone on LinkedIn just for the sake of networking, quote unquote.
And I will say, for people who are just starting out in this crazy industry, that you might not know a lot of people at the very beginning. And I think that really has to do with what type of work you're able to find or how successful you are with regards to code pitching. But I would say the longer that you stick with it, the more organically you'll just meet people later on.
Yep, absolutely. I think even just like writing for a publication, you'll meet other people who are writing for that publication or going to conferences, right? You come across people who have similar interests. It's sort of that like underlying goal that you have in mind when you're meeting people that I think is the part that makes it feel sleazy versus authentic.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, on a daily basis, I don't know if I'd call this networking, but I'm on Twitter probably too much. But I also don't like have a little tab in my Google Calendar that says like be on Twitter for half an hour when 3:30 p.m. rolls around. It's really like I'm on Twitter when it's the 10 minutes that I have between calls, or if I'm coming back from walking my dog and before answering emails, or if I'm just like rage tweeting and I happen to see some other stuff come on.
Woden is so good at Twitter. I'm terrible at Twitter. I think I have like PTSD from Twitter from working for a viral media company. But for me, oftentimes, like a good example of networking on a daily basis is if I see on LinkedIn that someone I used to work with has switched jobs or they're working at a publication I think is interesting, I'll send them a note that says congrats and, you know, let them know that if they need help, I'm totally game. I think I've ended up doing a few different projects because of that. And it's fun to work with people I've worked with in the past. So I don't just send that email to send it. I'm usually genuinely excited about the prospect of working with them again and also really proud of them for their new job. The other thing I do is I still email people in my network. So I talked about doing this at the beginning of freelancing, saying like, hey, I am freelancing. If you need any help, let me know. And I still do that now if I have a gap of time to fill. So my emails are usually pretty short and sweet. But if I see, for example, in 6 weeks that I have 2 weeks with nothing on my radar, I'll email a couple of the editors I know and say, hey, I hope all is well. I have a chunk of time coming up at the end of the month. I can take on three more articles. If you need help, let me know. And I definitely get assignments that way as well. So like I said, I think probably 75% of my work comes from referrals. But then I do sometimes respond to calls for pitches on social media as well. But I feel like that really nets fewer overall assignments. Do you use social media at all to find assignments, Woden?
I like to bookmark the calls for pitches on Twitter and Facebook because as somebody who works on long-term stories, sometimes it's impossible to sell it when the idea comes to me. But say a magazine is working on an issue around a certain theme, I can look through my backlog of story ideas and see if there's anything I could sell. But I don't think that's a good place to find consistent work unless that call for work is explicit about looking for, you know,
like an ongoing contributor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the word.
Yeah, I agree. So I do that too. Actually, I save if I see on Facebook that an editor's asking for, you know, pitches about health, which I write about a lot, I'll save that. I won't necessarily send a pitch then, but just so I know that that person is looking, when I come up with an idea that might be a fit for them, I would email. I am in a lot of Facebook groups that people post calls to pitches on for the Pacific Northwest and women and non-binary people, and I'll maybe send an email every week, depending on how busy I am, to people who've posted saying they need editors and writers. But it's really only if I have free time, and I'll be perfectly honest with you that I don't think it nets a lot of work. So I can only think of a few times where it actually got me some kind of gig. So once I responded to a woman who needed embargoed science news stories written a couple days a week. I did that work for 2 weeks. It didn't work for my schedule, but I still on occasion will write something for them, but it doesn't pay super well. And then once I emailed a woman who said she needed health pitches for a Medium publication, and that eventually led to a column, but I had to send probably 10 plus pitches before one was accepted, and the column didn't happen until a few months later. So the time required there is maybe not worth the actual eventual assignments, or if it is, these things net out pretty rarely, and I do have a lot of experience, and that's still true. So, Woden, do you ever cold pitch editors at any time? Because I rarely do that anymore, but I'm curious if you do.
Yeah, I do. And I think it's just a numbers game, right? There are so many editors in this ecosystem that at some point I'll have to cold pitch.
Yeah, true.
But I want to go back to the point that I said, like, the longer you're in this, I'm going into year six of freelancing. And at this point, I feel pretty good saying that I know most of the editors at the publications I want to work for. Mm-hmm. And if I don't know them, then I'm probably one degree of connection away from them. So yeah, I think it's really important to be good at cold pitching. Sometimes I even cold email editors and ask them out to coffee.
So when we say cold pitching, by the way, we mean sending a pitch to someone who you've never met or never worked with before. Like, it's like cold calling them, right?
No
cold,
relationship.
Cold pitching. You have no relationship with them. It's usually over email. So tell me a little bit more about that. Why coffee over a call or an email? And what usually happens when you sit down with those editors?
Yeah, so this goes back to my point about networking not being gross and transactional. I want people to know who I am on the other side of the screen and not just put a face to a name, but also learn more about what I'm interested in, how I think, And when I ask them out to coffee, it's usually because they work somewhere that I really admire. So in my email, I will say, I'd love to learn what you're looking for from freelancers for your publication. Can I buy you a coffee? That's basically it. And the fascinating thing about a lot of these coffee meetings is that sometimes I can just be spitballing story ideas and they'd be like, interesting. Want to pitch that to us? Even if I don't think about that offhand as being a good fit. Like, I don't work there, but they have a good idea of what works or what doesn't.
I love that. It's pretty bold, but I think, yeah, connecting with people face-to-face still is always better than just being a name over email. So I have been an editor before. I think the people I had relationships with, I was much more willing to reach out to them if I needed something. So that's a great idea. I will say if I'm going to cold pitch, I have sort of an email template that I'll use. We'll include that in this week's newsletter if you're a co-op member, but it's pretty basic. It says, hi, my name is Jenny Gritters. I'm reaching out because I saw that you posted in X Facebook group or on Twitter about needing help with X thing, and I'd love to be considered. And then I include a short bio about me that explains where I've worked before, some links to my personal website, and then direct links to 3 clips. That's it. It's pretty basic. It's also really effective. I often get emails back even if the opportunity isn't a fit, and sometimes it's mapped out later down the line. So I really keep it brief. I was an editor for years and I know how little time editors have. Like, I would read 100 plus pitches a week when I ran a freelance program for Upworthy. So it really has to be short, sweet, and interesting. We'll get into that issue of a good pitch probably in a later episode because that's another thing people ask us about a lot. But the bottom line is really be concise.
I agree on the concision. Even my emails to editors asking them out to coffee are no more than like 4 sentences.
Yeah, like the editors just really don't have time and their inboxes are madness. That is a reality. It's not that they don't like you. It's just that you need to be sort of respectful of the fact that they just have a second. Let's talk about finding reoccurring work though, because we talked about how social media is often not a good place to find reoccurring gigs. When I want to work for an editor on multiple assignments, I consider that first assignment to very much be a trial, both for them and for me. Like, do I like working with them? Do they like working for me? And if the answer is yes, then I'll pitch the editor again, usually once I am in final edits on my first piece. So after that, my pitches can be much more casual because the editor knows me. So it's definitely a best case scenario, but it doesn't happen with every client. Wudan, I'm curious, how do you push on doing another assignment or building a consistent relationship with an editor when you want to work with them again?
Yeah, I 100% agree that that first assignment is kind of like a trial. It's almost like dating.
It is.
As uncomfortable yeah. and strange as that analogy may be. But when I have gaps in my schedule, like if I'm home from travel for an awkward week or two between my own trips, I'll let editors who I have ongoing relationships know about my availability. I'll send a quick email like, it looks like I'll have some availability this week to help you with Y thing. Might you need an extra pair of eyes or some extra help then? And I feel like framing things as a question invites an answer versus something like saying, please let me know if I can help. I feel like psychologically speaking, better. I mean, people are more primed or they want to answer a question, right? Like, questions beg that.
Yeah, I agree. I usually frame my emails in the same open-ended way. Like, I have this time, I have room for 3 more stories. Do you need anything in this window of time? And it tends to work well. I think it's also about working with editors that I trust, though. So when I email that to people, it's usually people I've worked with for quite some time. And even if they don't need help, they usually respond to tell me that because we have a relationship, which also helps me plan ahead, which is actually really important. As I'm sure you know, if you're a freelancer, radio silence is really makes things tough. So working with someone that you have a relationship with can really help you plan ahead, which is key.
Yeah, and I will say with pitching a publication a second time, I just pitch them. It's kind of like the only reason I might need to get in touch. But, you know, by that point, like Jenny said, we've already developed that relationship. And my strategy with pitching with editors who already know who I am is always starting with a soft pitch first, which is super low stakes. Usually my emails are like, hello, editor. I've started investigating a fascinating story about ABC topic. Is this something you'd be interested in covering for your publication? If so, I'd happily put together a fleshed out more detailed pitch for your consideration.
I love that because I think it means much less time and work for you unless they're interested. You're not building pitches out for editors who might not want them. And I think that is actually the biggest time suck for freelance writers is spending all this time building pitches, crafting these perfect emails, and then you send them to an editor and you never hear back. That's unpaid work. It's sort of a waste of time for you. So I love the idea of sort of if you have a relationship with someone, starting at the beginning and just offering them sort of a general topic before you dive in.
Yeah, definitely. Very hard agree. I think some of my pitches are like a paragraph, not for my investigations, but, you know, anything from a short feature to news stories. Or even better, sometimes a pitch is just a sentence with a link to a study or whatever.
Totally. Especially if it's a newsy piece, like you really don't need something long. It's, hey, X thing happened. Here's the link. Do you want me to write about this? Especially for science stories, I feel like that's really applicable. So another thing I often am trying to teach people is that you should look for work in non-traditional places. So if you look at my roster of work, there are always a few bigger bylines mixed in, but the majority of what I'm working on is actually niche publications or magazines associated with brands.
This is where the money's at. I keep telling people this. I have no idea if they believe me or not. But I always say rates in journalism are not on the up and up.
Accurate.
Like later we'll talk about getting to this elusive a dollar a word for stories, but that doesn't increase linearly over time. Like that, right. It's unlikely that that dollar a word turns into $4 a word. So if you want your hourly or project rate to go up, non-journalism clients are where to go. My biotech client, my trade publication client, and institutional clients really give me the best bang for my buck. And it really increases the average hourly rate, period. It averages out because it kind of compensates for lower hourly wages with some journalism publications, especially if I'm working on a long-term project. How does that square with your experience?
Yeah, it's totally true. So my most lucrative clients are associated with brands. I'm often making upwards of $200 an hour for them, but then a lot of my journalism is paying like $30 an hour, right? So when you math all that out together, it comes out to an hourly rate that is actually sustainable and brings me to that six figures every year. So I want to say I'm still making journalism for all of these brands for the most part. So I'm really careful about the ethics. And we may also talk about this in the future, this sort of content marketing space. Like I would never write a journalistic story about the brands I'm working with. Once I'm on their payroll, they're totally off limits as story sources or subjects. And I would never compromise my journalistic integrity just to make a marketing play for the company. For example, I once was offered a project where the client wanted me to use only their experts and their data as sources in the story. I declined to work on that project. So it's sort of like a case-by-case basis when working with brands, but it's really not impossible to find brands that offer opportunities to do good journalism. Like some of my best work has been paid a dollar a word, and it's for university magazines that often have really good editors that have, you know, worked at traditional publications in the past and wanted something more stable. So I really push people to consider looking in lesser known places. There's a lot of different spaces that need content, quote unquote, and you as a writer have the skill to build that content.
I think that about covers where we find work, right?
Yes.
I mean, the big takeaways here are, one, figure out who you know and use them as a way in. Does your friend work at a startup that might need help starting a blog? Does your former coworker work at a magazine where she could connect you with somebody to pitch or somebody who could commission a story? Does your childhood best friend work in the marketing department of a university? I mean, all of these people are links to possible work opportunities, but remember, it's not networking, it's relationship building. And also, I would say, you know, create your own opportunities and don't be afraid to do so if you're really chasing after something.
Yeah, so like Wudan said, number two, networking doesn't have to suck. It simply means keeping in touch and expressing genuine interest in the work of people you respect. It's relationship building. We're going to stop calling it networking now. And if an opportunity comes up to work together, it's just a part of a continued conversation. I like to think of it that way. Like maybe you work together, maybe you don't, but just knowing that person is important, and media is such a small world that you're going to end up coming across them at some point in your career.
Yeah. And third, I mean, this goes back to one of our first episodes, be shameless. Tell people when you have open availability.
Yes.
Don't expect work to drop into your lap. You're going to have to go find it most of the time. So consider ways of reaching out that are efficient and brief. You might even want to keep a list of people to reach out to if you find yourself with a few weeks and no assignment ahead. I think I talked about this before. I called it rotating stability. Like, these are the people on my rotating stability list.
Yes. So four, you can definitely use online groups and social media to find calls for pitches, but the net gain for your time might be pretty low. The goal is really to find ongoing assignments and build relationships versus just these one-off, you know, one assignment for a bunch of different publications. So if you are going to send some cold pitches to editors based on their calls for pitches online, don't spend all your time looking for work this way. Be super brief. Give yourself maybe a few hours every week to send pitches if that's something you want to spend time on. But spend more of your energy thinking about how you can find gigs that are consistent, because that is really what's going to help you build a business that is going to last.
And five, the ideal situation is to build relationships with editors who trust you so you can make more casual pitches and they'll think of you when they need to make assignments. You can do that by being polite, direct, brief, easy to work with, and creating good work. Also, not every client will be a good fit for you. I'm thinking about all the people who I just went on one first date with, and that was it, both literally and figuratively. Make the first assignment an experiment and decide if you still want to work together after that.
Yes, and no shame if you don't. I think you don't have to stick with the first person you go on that first date with. Next, you want to look for work in places where you might not expect to find it. One of my editors used to say, zig where everyone else zags. I think about that a lot. So university magazines, magazines run by brands, airline magazines, trade publications, all those places offer high rates and they could allow you to do some really stellar journalism. Companies also often need written work. So think about like a startup that has a blog or somewhere that needs press releases or marketing copy. Depending on what kind of writing work you do, those places might be a good fit for you. Wudan even provides media training to scientists. So there are lots of different areas here where you can use your writing skills to make money that might not be in the traditional bucket that you first think of.
Speaking of non-traditional buckets, I just learned that Costco has a magazine. Did you know this?
Ooh, and it probably pays well.
I mean, a lot of people read it.
Interesting. Yeah, see, that's what I mean. Like these sort of niche publications, there's probably fewer people pitching those and the opportunity to get paid well to do some really cool projects.
Yeah, for sure. And finally, don't keep all your eggs in one basket. Jenny has always said the magic is in the mix. Look mm-hmm. for work in many different places. Try not to focus too much on one client. We've both lost clients when an editor switches jobs or when a company's priorities change. And if you've dumped all your focus into that one client, it will destroy your bank account. Oh, and one last thing about finding work. Can I share a secret?
Are you kidding? I love secrets. Share away.
Journalists love secrets.
I do. I really love knowing things that other people don't
know. I don't know if it's right to call it a secret now, but it's a way that I've learned to be resourceful about finding these recurring gigs. So sometimes I look at job boards, never with the intention of applying for a job, but I look for job postings for communications managers at different publications.
Ooh.
So like nonprofits, biotech, institutions, and I look at the job duties that they'll have. And I wonder if, you know, one of their job duties might involve working with freelance writers. If they do, and it's an organization that I might be interested in working with, and I think about conflicts of interest, I'll reach out to somebody there and see if they might need help. It's hit or miss, but again, it's, you know, one of those places that obviously uses freelance writers. Maybe fewer people do work for them. So it's totally worth a shot for gigs like that, that are not like immediately well publicized, but you can sort of work backwards and infer an organization's like needs for freelance writers.
I love that. That's so smart. I've also parlayed full-time jobs into freelance work in the past. You know, when I've made a good connection with someone, talking to them about wanting a full-time job, I decide yet again that I do not want a full-time job because I love freelancing. We end up still wanting to work together. There's also the opportunity for some freelance work. So totally, just because something is sort of written out there as like it looks like it's going to be a full-time gig, they obviously have a need for that kind of work. And so it's smart to sort of think broadly. I love that you look at job boards.
Yeah, I'm creeping everywhere.
I totally love that.
The tricky thing about finding good anchor clients is, in my experience, Well, I don't think I am this way necessarily, but in talking to other people about how they view anchor clients, a lot of people really hold them like close to their hearts. And it kind of makes sense. It's like the unfortunate reality of freelancing, right? And on one hand, you can think about all other freelancers as your competition. I'm not saying I think this way. I think some people do. And so once you land an anchor client, again, one like any other client that has a fixed amount of money in their budgets, some people might not want to share their contacts there. You know, does that make sense? Again, I don't like this scarcity mindset. I think I try to have an abundance mindset as much as possible with this kind of stuff. But I think the really big takeaway from all of this and how we've described finding regular work or assignments is that you can find your own opportunities. Go where no other freelancer has gone before.
Yeah, I like thinking about the abundance mindset. I also work that way. I tend to think that there is enough work out there for me and for Wudan and for, right? Like, I think that freelancing right now, a lot of places don't have the budget to hire someone full time. So there's a lot of opportunities for work. And I try to be really helpful to other freelancers about connecting them with people. Thinking about the fact that there are endless opportunities for you out there is a much better way to approach finding work than thinking that there's a finite list. And if you don't find it, you're screwed, right? So I do think, I often say this, make sure you have a lot of different balls in the air. Like if one ball drops, if one client drops, it won't be so much of a disaster. That's similar, that kind of abundance mindset of having lots going on. It tends to be safer, I think.
Yeah, I keep telling my parents who wish I was a doctor or a lawyer that I have so much more job stability as a freelancer, because if one of my clients go down, I still have like half a dozen to a dozen, my rotating stability or so in the bag.
Yeah, this is why I'm always saying that I feel more stable as a freelancer than I ever did in a media job where layoffs are constant.
And this is where the hustle comes in. It can feel like a lot to reach out to people while you're working on your assignments.
Yeah, it definitely is sort of multitasky, right? So I do try to carve out a little bit of time each day, like 30 minutes or so, to look about 6 weeks ahead and see if I have any gaps coming up. I'm pretty vigilant about doing that. And if I see that, say, I have work booked until the middle of April and it is the beginning of March, I'm probably going to reach out to some people in my network starting in the middle of March, about a month ahead of time, and maybe send some pitches and tell them that I have a bit of time. But if I'm full up, I just keep working.
I pitch when I see my feature well drying up, like a month or two from when they will actually dry up. I mean, features are what I try and focus my creative energy on, but it's not always possible. And most days I don't bother pitching shorter things. It doesn't really make financial sense for me unless it will literally take me a day to pitch, report, write, and edit. And the risk of cold pitching, especially with a publication you haven't ever worked with before, is really just getting screwed over. I mean, whether it's a very long editing process or you find out that the publication pays late, it's kind of not worth it to me. Like at this point, I feel like I'd rather stick with the rotation of clients that actually treat me well.
Totally. I think I would so much rather have a client that treats me well that is at a slightly less known publication than one that is just a total mess with editing and payments that is at a more well-known publication. But that is, you know, that's a personal preference. So I will also say that you're going to inevitably get rejected quite a bit when you are looking for work as a freelance writer. So when you reach out to people asking for the opportunity to work together, somebody is going to say no to you. A lot of people are going to say no. My old professor used to say, you cry the first time and then you get over it. And that's journalism. And it's true. I feel like,
tough love.
Yeah, I feel that was in journalism school. And I mean, I do feel like I'm more immune to rejection now because I'm literally so used to it. Like, I don't take it personally as often as I used to. I know, because I was an editor, that there's a lot going on at media publications. People are overworked and underpaid. They have small budgets. They have hundreds of pitches per week. Maybe someone else sent a pitch that you sent or that's similar to yours like 3 hours before. I have been that editor. So when your idea or your pitch gets rejected, I promise it's usually not about you. That is hard to make your brain understand sometimes, but you know, you're gonna have to get used to getting rejected and you're gonna have to learn to keep going.
Yeah, I think that keep going is just doing this sort of work. I will say getting pitches rejected, again, not to make another analogy about this, but getting pitches rejected for me really helped a lot when I was dating. Like, these are all very transferable skills, like dealing with rejection, rejecting other people. I mean, you know, like, or clients can reach out to you and it's not just them saying no to you, but you also have the power to say no.
Yeah, this is the relationship thing. And I will say, first dates are so much like job interviews. these are transferable life skills, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, the successes we've both had is really about steady forward momentum, even if one project doesn't pan out. Right now, I'm working on a story that I started pitching in 2016.
Oh my God.
I wish I was kidding. I'm 100% not.
That is 4 years.
Yeah, I could have studied this in college, or I don't know. This is like a PhD thesis. Anyway, it takes a long, long time sometimes for a story to find its right home.
And on that note, we are going to head out and get back to work, especially Wudan, since she has a crazy month ahead. If you haven't already, please consider signing up to support us on Patreon. We will give you access to worksheets and exercises, all sorts of stuff that will help you think through how to find assignments, where to look for them, and get you moving towards building a freelance writing business that makes good money and also supports the kind of life you want to build.
As always, if you have questions or comments or things you want us to investigate, please reach out via email.
Yes, email away. And I will see you on the internet next time, Wudan.
Bye, Jenny.
Funding for Season 1 of the Writers Co-op is made possible by a grant from the National Science Writers Association. The Writers Co-op is hosted by me, Jenny Gritters, and Wudan Yan, and produced by Susan Vallett.